Hello and welcome. My name is Paul Dollery. You are the members of the 42 and this is the Football Family Podcast. Thank you for joining us on this glorious Monday, a day when a competitive win for Ireland is no longer just a relic of the distant past. It is a real thing that happened on Saturday evening. And Gavin Cooney, you can vouch for this claim because you were there to see it live. Gav, picture this scene, right? Stephen Kenny has just guided Ireland to a successful defence of their World Cup crown at, I don't know, Saudi Arabia 2042. And your kids are in school telling their mates, "My dad was there when it all started." When they ask you, Gav, "What was it like, Dad? Tell us about the boys of Baku," how will you respond?
Oh, I'm just glad my children will still be talking to me in 2042. I was there. I've been at more atmospheric funerals. 69,000 seater stadium. There was about 2,000 in it. You can only ever really hear the Irish fans. UEFA claimed that there were 7,000 there, but I think they included all the police and security in that as well. And utterly bizarre atmosphere. Bizarre stadium out in the, like, 10 kilometers outside the city, which is incredibly difficult to get to. But a win, and a win is a win is a win is a win. So it's good for Stephen Kenny and his team to finally get off the mark.
Yeah, in all seriousness, it really was a decent win out in Baku. And also here to discuss it on today's show is football journalist David Snaid. Dave, I think we'd all like to believe that it was the first of many competitive wins that Ireland will have under Stephen Kenny.
Well, that will hopefully be the case, but I think it's one of them where, and obviously we can joke about it, it's not really a victory that we should be celebrating, but as we more so was talking about beforehand last week, just boys a bit of breathing space. But what Shane Duffy, I thought was interesting, he made a point about fellas need to get that winning feeling. Lads need to actually, thought it was quite telling that he said when he came into the squad, they were used to winning big games, and there have been good moments, there have been great moments, there's been major tournaments, so thought that was quite interesting that the players as well, and it was something that has been said by all the players, no one shied away from it, that a win was needed just to kind of get that sense of relief, and I think that is the overriding emotion at the end of the 90 minutes, even though it was quite comfortable by the end.
Yeah, before we get stuck into the assessment of the performance, I guess, lads, Gav, you mentioned it there about the attendance, was there any explanation locally as to why there was such a paltry turnout for the game?
It wasn't a COVID restriction thing. We asked, I heard Darren Maloney, the RT commentator, turn around and ask a local journalist, like, "Where are all your fans?" And his answer was like, "Well, have you seen us play?" So obviously the place is in the grip of a kind of a nationalist fervour at the moment. There was that war with Armenia over the Karabakh region, which Azerbaijan claimed to have won. So there's flags everywhere, like to the point where the bottled water that we were handed at the stadium had "Karabakh is Azerbaijan" printed on it, along with the water being described as a taste of victory. But for all its nationalistic fervour, its national football team is not inspiring the same level of devotion.
Dave, on the performance, I suppose the obvious answer to this is the three goals and the clean sheet, but what pleased you most about it?
The three goals and the clean sheet.
Thanks, Dave.
No, just scored a goal from free play and cutting them open a couple of times. And obviously, you know, I never said beforehand that Ireland would win the game. Fancy Ireland would win 1-0, that and it'd probably be from a set piece. But just a couple of the movements, sharp movements. It wasn't as if Ireland were absolutely dominant in the sense of totally bossing the game, because with times when Azerbaijan did have chances and a better team would have actually punished Ireland, you would have imagined. But just those little moments, obviously Callum Robinson's goals essentially, but just those moments of sharp play and actually a bit of luck with the second one, because it was slight deflection and the keeper was ropey. He should have saved it, really. Maybe the deflection put him off, but it looked as if he still got far enough over to have got at least one hand to that shot. But the first goal was just brilliant, and it was just good to see an Ireland team produce a moment like that, because there's been goals obviously throughout the campaign. As reading Gavin's piece earlier, the fact there was more in the last campaign under Mick McCarthy already. So, but there just haven't been enough of those moments of kind of the clinical nature at the top end of the pitch, and we kind of got that. Even though it could have been so much more if they were maybe a bit more ruthless in front of the goal, it could have been even more impressive. But listen, 3-0 away from home, you take it. Have to, especially after the last 14 games.
Yeah. Performance-wise, Gav, what did you make of it overall? I mean, can Ireland fans justifiably feel more optimistic about the future now that the monkey of a competitive win is off the back?
Yeah, I think so. Just because getting a result kind of validates a lot of what people have been saying before, and a lot of the kind of mince the progress that has been, that we've talked about being made in the campaign so far. Ironically, like, they were 2-0 up at halftime. It's the first time they've led by more than a goal in a competitive game under Kenny so far. Ironically, it was at the end of possibly the worst first half performance they've put in the three away games so far. They started really well, and then Robinson scored that really sensational opening goal, and then they just kind of stopped playing. I don't really know, haven't fully figured out what happened. They fell too deep, and, you know, they were playing a lot of long balls, actually. They mixed it up a lot more than usual, and that was obviously a tactic, because Kenny was speaking to us ahead of the game, talking about Azerbaijan's strength, and he said their main strength is just how quickly they transition into defence and put eight players between the ball and their own goals. So there was obviously a desire to knock it long and get in behind them before they had the chance to assume that shape. Like, Bazunu to Ida was the most frequent passing combination in Ireland's first half. But although they overdid it and the ball wasn't sticking, Daryl Horgan did really well to set up the second goal, but he had a bit of a nightmare, if we're quite honest, overall. So in fairness to Kenny, he made the change he had to make at halftime. Jamie McGrath came on, and it was just a little bit more control. And Ireland moved the ball quite well in the second half. I thought Matt Doherty was really good. They really played Doherty into the game, and he created a lot of chances down the right. And they were just maddeningly profligate then in the second half. But I suppose, like, we've bemoaned the fact before that we haven't had Robbie Keane, but then pointed out to the fact, well, we're not really creating chances for Robbie Keane's replacement to miss. But Ireland missed a hatful of chances in the second half. As David said, it could have been 6 or 7 nil, but I suppose it's a good thing that we're creating them.
I thought it was interesting, though, even just because I was watching on TV, but it just looked as if sometimes, I think Doherty kind of summed it up, just like, he looked very confident, though, a lot of the time with the ball, which is, like, strange for a team, even though what Gab was saying, there was times where it was frustrating more so in the first half, but there was times when Ireland were on the ball and when they actually were knocking about it, they actually seemed fairly confident. You wouldn't have thought it was a team. Now, I know, listen, it's against Azerbaijan, even though you're away from home, it's a team that that you should be at least comfortable in possession against and on the ball. But, like, one of the moves, I think actually Horgan started off where he got back and played out, but one of the moves which involved Ida and Doherty down that right side, and it was just a lovely little kind of first time flick pass from Doherty to set up the cross, and Robinson struck a volley when he was coming back kind of on his back foot, which was inches over the bar. Like, if that had gone in, that would have been, like, terrific. And it was just good to see a team that you could be so easily a bit bereft of a bit of confidence because of what's happened over the last year or so. But just seeing that they were able to, in certain moments, put that together was hugely encouraging. But then the key thing, obviously, tomorrow, I don't think it really matters, essentially. Like, obviously, if the performance is terrible, that's going to be a bit of a downer, but it's more so now for next month following up against Luxembourg and doing something against them, and that will really kind of be a proper sense of when the FAI board are actually looking at the campaign to say you can begin to hopefully get a sense of, yeah, that things are going in the right direction towards the end of it results wise because I do think that there's been enough in some of the performances overall to kind of justifiably say that Kenny has been putting a proper plan of action in place. It's just he needs obviously those results to back it up, and getting a result against Luxembourg is going to be massive for him next month, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen Kenny has been dealing with a lot of challenges over the last year or so since he came in. But one of those really hasn't been any sense of disharmony or unrest within the camp, certainly within the current squad. There really does seem to be, Gav, a kind of a tangible sense of unity among the players. And you could see in the reaction to the win on Saturday evening and the scenes that greeted the final whistle, almost a sense of vindication for the players as well, because they seem to be like 100% behind Kenny and what he's trying to do.
Very much so, I think. Like, we haven't really heard any whispers. Well, I haven't heard any whispers or anything of guys who are in the squad who are unhappy with how things are being run. Nothing has leaked from that dressing room since the video stuff, really. Like, nothing really gets out, which is usually a sign that the players are happy and content. Like, and when they've, like, oh, like when we, like, generally in press conferences, you'll ask players, you know, do you like the manager? Like, do you believe in his methods? And they'll always generally say yes, because that's what they're trained to do. And, you know, if they if they go out and flame him, they're unlikely to get picked under him. But there is more enthusiasm, I think, in how Kenny has been backed by some of his players than you would typically get. Like, Matt Doherty being the obvious one. Like, he's been very forthright in his support. Shane Duffy was really good talking to us after the game on a range of subjects, but also said, like, anyone with eyes can see the progression we've made. Callum Robinson, before all everything kicked off on Tuesday, did a concur with Doherty when he was asked and said that, you know, the training has been really good. Everything is done with a very clear and express purpose for the next game upcoming. So they do seem quite happy with the level of coaching that they're getting. And they do seem a united bunch. Like the Robinson thing did bring them together, I have to say, rightly or wrongly. They all came out in support of him, including Stephen Kenny. Kenny handled the other side of the debate with a bit more diplomacy, as you kind of imagine. But we spoke to Nathan Collins, John Egan and Duffy, and they all came out and said, his choice, we stick by him. And there was definitely, that became a point of like a rallying call ahead of this game. You could obviously see with Robinson's celebration where he plugged his fingers in his ears, and even his Instagram post was like, thanks to my brothers for sticking with me. And the comments are just a series of Irish players sending like love hearts or messages of support and so on. So they seem a pretty united group, I have to say.
You look at what's happened in terms of the staff who've left and the manner of what's happened, obviously, with Damien Duff. There's obviously sort of with Wembley. Alan Kelly has left, but then obviously the staff that Kenny then has gone in and brought in and made and done it very quickly. Like, there was no kind of rigmarole, there was no kind of nothing seemed dragged out. And by bringing in, say, Anthony Barry, Dean Coyle, also having David Ford around the group in terms of almost like a mentor and talking to lads about how they're getting on and the mental side of things and what that's like been like, because obviously some of the challenges that have been around this camp with COVID and other stuff. So, things could have, the wheels could have came off very quickly, and players could have easily, if Kenny hadn't made those right appointments after losing people who he wanted there in the first place, if he had, for want of a better word, balls that up and brought in people and it wasn't working, then you would have seen that with mirrored with the results and performances that stuff would have begun to have leaked, I would imagine. But it's clear that he's got those appointments right, and he's been the one who's gone out and got them, so like, he deserves a huge amount of credit for that, because it has steadied the ship somewhat for him, because very quickly things could have actually derailed when some of the performances were beginning to look results were obviously beginning to look like it was, but clearly hasn't been the case. And when you do speak to players, it's clear that obviously like they're accepting that they still need to do more in terms of results, but they're talking about the work that's being done and the quality of what's happening on the training ground and when they meet up, and even just the meetings that they're having and how things are carried about, that it does seem as if they're trying to do things the right way and do it in an environment and in the type of kind of professional environment that maybe players are accustomed to and expect. So I think that has been one of the important things for Kenny over the while, is getting those replacements right for key staff that he would have lost.
Yeah. You mentioned Anthony Barry there, Dave. Are we getting any sense of how big an impact he might be having here? I mean, this is a guy who he seems to be quietly working away in the background, but in his day job, as we know, he's working with the current Champions League holders and Premier League leaders. I mean, given that calibre, he's surely become a major asset for Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, like it's one of them where obviously when he first got the role, I didn't know a huge amount about him. Obviously would have been involved with Wigan, spoke to people there, and they were very complimentary about how he worked, talking about set pieces and defensively and stuff. But just in the time that he's been getting the job and speaking to people around the camp, it does seem to be a case of he's someone who's a good solid sounding board for Kenny, someone who will give ideas. He's not maybe just say, I don't mean just a coach, but it's not as if he's just put on a session and that's the end of his work. Like, he's someone who has an impact around the place along with say Keith Daniels as well. So like, as I said earlier, like, it does seem as if he's someone who the players all respect as well, without doubt, and as someone who he's clear has made a positive impact on it. And I wouldn't, Gav did a big piece on him in terms of when he got the job and spoke to different people about it too. So
yeah, Gav, are you hearing anything about what on the grapevine about what he's bringing to the setup?
I don't know, like, anytime you ask Stephen Kenny like, how great is Anthony Barry, effectively, he praises Keith Andrews and everyone else and all his staff. He's loath, and like, if you ask the same about Andrews, I'd imagine he would praise everyone else around Andrews as well. He's very loath to pick out someone for praise. But I don't think that comes from an insecurity point of view, because he's had the intelligence to appoint him, you know. And players, it's just like, Barry is a very highly rated coach. Like, he was brought to Chelsea, he did his pro license did his pro license with Frank Lampard, and then Lampard brought him and Jody Morris brought Barry on board from Wigan at Chelsea, having remembered him from that course. And when Lampard and Morris got the bullet, the Chelsea players insisted that Barry stay on because, well, he ran the set pieces and they were impressed by him. But he was also, he was really a good conduit and go-between between the players and the managers and the manager's staff. So Tuchel has kept him on board. I did a press conference with Tuchel and he was also obviously very complimentary about Barry, as you kind of might expect. And I think it's going to come up now at the press conference later on, mainly because with Kenny, because I'm going to ask it. But like you can see that the system is clearly influenced by Barry and Chelsea. Like where Kenny is, like, began with a 3-5-2 in Serbia in March, and he's talked about how it changed to a more like 3-4-2-1, kind of very similar to the 3-4-3 that Chelsea played. Chelsea and Barry play. So I think that's definitely seeping in and influencing what's going on. And like that's something that you couldn't really say about the FAI and the Republic of Ireland team for so long, that the team were definitely being influenced by the cutting edge at the very top of the game. And like that's a good thing, you know. If there are things happening at Chelsea that can be brought into the Irish camp, okay, we don't have the same standard of player, but players these days want that really high level of coaching, and I think Barry's definitely bringing it.
Yeah, and what you were saying there, Gav, kind of follows on from partly your excellent piece of analysis on the 42 this morning. There's a perception among some of Kenny's detractors that he's been too rigid, that he's sticking too tightly to his philosophy, that he can't adapt and change. But as you highlighted in that piece, which is well worth checking out for anybody who hasn't done so yet, there's really no basis to that claim. It's nonsense.
Everything's changed. He began with a 4-3-3 in September. That was binned by October because Ireland were too easy to play through for a 4-2-3-1, which he didn't get much of a chance to bed in because of all the COVID cases and injuries and so on that so interrupted that those god-awful games in October and November. And now he's going to a back three for this World Cup campaign. On his very first presser when he was announced in April of 2020, he was asked whether he would consider playing a back three because, you know, it had often been talked about that, well, the best way to get the likes of Coleman and Doherty and Duffy and Egan all into the same team to play a back three. And Kenny said, look, I'm not wedded to anything, I'm open to it, but the subtext was clear when he said I've never really played it before. But he's playing it now. It's tweaked as it's gone along, and Ireland are also playing in different ways, like they've effectively become more of a counter-attacking team in 2021 as opposed to 2020. Like in those games in 2020, they were averaging, well, I think it was just over 500 passes a game. Now it's just less than 400. So like the stat that encapsulates it all, because I don't want to bore people too much with stats. For every possession that Ireland have in a game, they're playing one less pass in that phase. And they've become far more efficient attacking-wise. That's seen in the little-known stat of goals scored. There was one goal in the whole of 2020, and we've got 8 in this qualifying campaign so far. The flip side of that is that they're more open defensively, like they're conceding more goals and more shots than they were in 2020 as well. But there's clearly been, like, you can argue the toss as to whether these are the right decisions. And there are question marks over the current system. Like, Ireland can look too easy to open midfield. Like there is a, like if this is the Chelsea system that Ireland are using, they don't have Kante and they don't have Jorginho. You know, they need a little bit more protection. And I think he's still struggling to get the right balance among the front three. I think Jamie McGrath actually might be, if not the missing piece, the best option. But, you know, there is a strand of criticism to Kenny that here's a starry-eyed idealist who isn't in touch with the real world, asking his players to play in a style that's not comfortable for them. Like that's fundamental horse shit. Like, and Kenny even said after the game on Saturday that we've had a new system, change a system from March onwards, it suits the players more. And he said things have to improve and they will improve. But you can see we've, like, Kenny from the summer camp and into September and now into October, there hasn't always been a consistency of players available, but we've Ireland have had more consistency in the formation that he's played. And I think players are getting more used to the roles and what they're asked to do, and more importantly are more aware of where players are around them, which makes a passing game so much easier. So that level of consistency is definitely improving Ireland. And there's I'm not saying that we've got, like, they play more long balls than they did last year, for example. It's like 11% of their passes now are long as opposed to 8% last year, so they're mixing it up a bit more. But there's more a variety in attack, and there's definitely signs of more coaching in attack. Like the most obvious example of that was how James McLean set up that first goal on Saturday night. Like he shuffled the ball onto his left foot as he has to do. But at that point, I was expecting him to take off, sprint for the end line, and thwack in a cross. He didn't. He played a really, really good pass. Clever, like, penetrative pass for Robinson, who, you know, he still had a lot to do and it was a great finish, but he was put into that position by a very kind of clever pass by McLean. That is, and that's clearly McLean playing that pass because he's been told to. Like, that's not his natural game. So, you can argue the toss as to whether this is the right system and, like, there's pros and cons for it, but to ignore the fact that the system has changed and the style of play has changed is not really reckoning with the reality that people are seeing before their eyes.
It was great to see Callum Robinson getting a couple of goals, which should hopefully boost his confidence from here, Dave. But a very significant moment as well, with Chiedozie Ogbenye becoming the first African-born player to score for Ireland. Another League of Ireland graduate, and a guy, I think, if he can stay injury-free, who seems like he could feature prominently for Stephen Kenny. I mean, if you're a defender and your legs are getting heavy coming into the final quarter of a game, the last thing you'd probably want to see is a guy like Ogbenye coming off the bench.
I know, because he's like he really is lightning, and he's direct and he's positive. And I think it was Qatar he came on in the for his debut, wasn't it, in the away game?
Hungary. Yeah.
And he made an impact pretty much straight away. He had chances. I think he shot into the side net and stuff. But you know, I should say, it's like having all those impacts off the bench. Like Daryl Horgan looked as if maybe in a couple of games that he's actually impressed off the bench. That's what he's done too. He's actually had that impact. Like for Ogbenye, like I put up a tweet up because I thought during the week it was very nice when he was talking about his mother and stuff and just how she feels like a bit of a celebrity walking around the place. But yeah, like it is. It's like, listen, it was in a start of goal, and it's something that shouldn't be just ignored or kind of glossed over. Like I saw that as well, like the Sky Sports are doing like a kind of a feature as well now on some of the lads in the team, like obviously Bazunu, Omar Bamadeli, and obviously Ogbenye as well. And like it's something that I think Kenny said it in that video with Sky Sports, it's something that people should be proud of, and it's something that's gonna become a lot more prevalent, hopefully now in the years to come, and something that Irish people should be proud of, you know. But like in terms of on the pitch wise, you just need those fellas off a bench, and if he does good enough to actually come in and warrant the start, that's great. But to be able to have a player who can change a game, and also from a set piece, again, I spoke about it, like it's not, people think, again, like what, and Gav kind of laid it out really well, I thought, as well, in terms of Kenny's practicalities and how he will adapt. Like to have another person like that who's capable of scoring a goal and set piece is going to be really important, and it's something that if players can show they have in their armory will get them closer to being involved under the Kenny team, because it is so important. And not just with say Ogbenye, but the point that McGab was making earlier about having the players to suit the system, especially going into this game, what's helped is the fact that there's been lads in the spine of that team who are playing every single week for their club. So even though McLean is League One, he's playing every week. Obviously, Gavin Bazunu plays every week. Shane Duffy's in the form, probably as in at the moment in his life. He's like what been in teams of the week, and I think he's close to being player of the month for Brighton. Like he's been sensational. Same with John Egan, he's been really good for Sheffield United. Callum Robinson is playing. He hasn't scored in about 6 or 7 games for West Brom club level, but he's playing constantly in a team that are looking to obviously get promoted and full of confidence. And Josh Cullen, who again has just been a revelation, and if I'm not sure what's going to happen with him in terms of obviously he's playing week in week out for Anderlecht, and it seems to be a move that has worked perfectly for him. But again, that can't be underestimated in the fact that lads who are playing regular football, and you just hope that the likes of an Adam Eade and Omar Bamadeli will get that too. And like Jeff Hendrick, you'd imagine he'll be on the move soon enough, considering what's happened at Newcastle. Like, need lads, because like some of the form Hendrick has shown in the games has been really kind of encouraging too. And that's on the back of him barely playing for Newcastle, and he's at a stage now where he's obviously one of the senior figures in the team. He needs to be playing regular football too. So just, I think, not that obviously you're gonna have to show flexibility, you know, but I think the fact that I think they've worked on that system in terms of with the defence more so than that, and you do need that the level of consistency where you don't have to chop and change because of certain personnel, and that you have lads who you know can be trusted in that system, because it's at international football, it's so important, it really is. Yeah.
And looking ahead to Tuesday night, lads, with friendly matches, there's a temptation, I suppose, for managers to give fringe players an opportunity, but is there an argument, Dave, that Stephen Kenny should go with his strongest 11 again against Qatar, with one eye on those games against Portugal and Luxembourg next month?
I personally think so. Obviously, there's going to be a balance. You have to kind of, like, lads have been away from, say, families been away from the clubs, and like it is a friendly against Qatar. Lads will, if they put it in and training and done all the rest of it, and Kenny might want to look at certain players, like, there will have to be a mix. I don't think you have to go wholesale changes, but I think I just think as well, he just needs to keep a bit of momentum going. It's going to be a decent crowd there. Like, they'll want to be not so much entertained, but see an Irish team put on a good performance. And even though I've just been talking about lads who've been playing regularly, there's still enough players in that team who still aren't playing enough football at club level that need more games and that want to play. The likes of Ede, Andrew Omobamadeli, Jeff Hendrick. These lads will need to play. And my gut instinct on it would be you play as strong a team as possible. You know, all of lads will be carrying knocks and might need a bit of a rest just to even keep club manager sweet, I suppose, a little bit. But I wouldn't be changing things too drastically. There'd be certain people, obviously, that would come in, but I don't think it needs to be a massive thing. I suppose it'd be nice to know. Has Quay been Kelleher played at the Aviva yet? I don't know, he hasn't. His games have all come away. So, like, someone like that, I think, would maybe be in line for a spot. But then, do you keep on maintaining that level of consistency with the defence and continuing that relationship? Now Shane Duffy said you trust him with his life now. So these factors do have to come into it, you know. And personally, I would say go as strong as you can with what's available and who's fit.
Yeah, Gab, if tomorrow night goes well and then Stephen Kenny turns his attention to Luxembourg and Portugal next month to round out the qualification campaign. If Ireland can put in another positive showing against Portugal and then maybe even avenge the defeat against Luxembourg, Stephen Kenny then finds himself all of a sudden in quite a strong position to make a decent case to the FAI for that new contract.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah. The Portugal game is kind of enough high profile, and the standard of opposition will have people on edge anyway. So that kind of takes care of itself in a way. That's not saying that Ireland will win or even draw, but you can expect a good performance of that just because they'll rise to the level of opposition. The really interesting game will be Luxembourg away. Like, I mean, this qualifying campaign really went to shit in that home game against Luxembourg. Nothing worked, and it was a bad night for Kenny. Like, they played a kind of 3-5-2, but there have been changes within the system and how he's reacted to the system since. You remember that game, they actually didn't mix it up. They did play too many short balls and lost, were just kind of completely smothered by the Luxembourg press. And Kenny didn't adapt very well. Like, he kept the system but brought on players kind of out of position. It ended up with Alan Brown at right wing back, and you're thinking, why is he sticking to this? But the system has kind of only really tweaked a small bit. There's been a lot of variation around it with those with the players picked in it most obviously, and Kenny has been much better, I think, at changing games from the sideline, which was a big criticism and a big worry from the Luxembourg game. Obviously, he made the right change at halftime in Baku by taking Horgan off and bringing McGrath on. That was the right decision, and Ireland played a lot better as a result. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they tackle the Luxembourg game, because Ireland remain a team who are much better on the counter-attack. Like, the only time, this is a great kind of paradox of what Kenny was swept the job on and what he was saying. The only games in which Ireland have had the majority possession so far have been the two home games with Luxembourg and Azerbaijan, and they were not good. And when Ireland have had the chance to counter-attack in other games, they've looked pretty good. So I think the Luxembourg game is an interesting test to that, to see how much the team has actually progressed. And if they win that, I honestly think he should be fine. I think there's a real level of support for the team. Like, the 200-odd Irish fans who made the journey to Baku sang Kenny's name throughout. It seems that the ticket sales for this game tomorrow night have been really good. I wasn't expecting it, but the FAI say 21,000 of the 25,000 available have been snapped up as of last night. Now, they're going at very, very reasonable prices, but people still have to go to the bother of turning out, and they're at least paying something for their tickets, which wasn't always the case in unglamorous friendlies under a former chief executive. So, I think he'd be in a pretty strong position, I have to say, if November goes well.
Yeah, it's not often you get to see this Qatari team in the flesh, so the Dublin public and the Irish public are obviously taking up the opportunity. Excellent stuff, as always, lads. We'll leave it there for now, but we will be back with another episode on Wednesday to wrap up this international window. The Qatar game, by the way, Tuesday night at the Aviva kickoff, is at 7:45, and it's live on RTE2. Coverage starts after the under-21 qualifier against Montenegro. So there's a nice little double header there. The 21s game, by the way, starts at 4:30. Gav, Dave, thanks very much as always. Thanks especially to you, our members, for your support. And we'll chat to you again on Wednesday.